So how was that? Were there any that you struggled with, or that you had a? Which ones?
Well, it just seems that there might be some ambiguity mm-hmm. with some of the sentences as we were recounting them.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly, well, is this an auditory word or a visual word, or could it be in the context that it's one or the other?
Mm-hmm.
So after further discussion, we'd probably just decide on picking one of those,
mm-hmm.
which we ended up doing most of the time.
Right.
But there was discussion about, it wasn't clear, was it this one or that one in particular?
Right. And in actual practice, you probably wouldn't fuss on a single word. What you're looking for is the pattern. Okay? So you're listening to the person, you're having interaction with them, and you start noticing a pattern of these words. Now, it's impossible, one of them is, I can't grasp what you're saying. So now, even though the word grasp is bolded, okay, saying is also a sensory word. So that it's a mixed sentence. It's got kinesthetic and auditory in the same sentence. So you're like, what do I do with that? So if you go, could you grasp it? Or let's see, what thing specifically can't you grasp? Oh, this handout's different from my old handout. They've changed it. So what the point that I want to make with this is sometimes if it's mixed, so there's like, it might be a kinesthetic and an auditory, or it could be any combination, that you later, with a little more sophistication, you notice the sequence, okay? And you can also match back the sequence of those words.
Number 6 is
there. Is that way?
Yes.
I can't seem to focus on what I need to come to grips with. Yeah, so how would it look if you had to a handle on it?
That's easy to match up.
Right.
But 5 was difficult. 5 was interesting. Because to get that much nagging from the boss, we thought it was A, because complaining, if they're both auditory. But Christine thought it was C. Christina thought it was C, because that's the way she made her feel.
Mm-hmm. So
the way that she felt came out more than...
So was the feeling more a response to the word nagging? Okay. So yeah, so you just want to make a distinction in your mind between how does the word make you feel versus what does it represent in terms of processing?
Question.
Yeah.
For us, the words meant more than any of this. And it was more like the tone of the words, whether they were antagonistic or whether they were... Also, really depended more on the person than if the words were matching. So, because the person interpreted whatever we were saying, translated into the language they used, phenomenally. And then they, that would be the answer they were looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's everything you said is true. It's like now that we've got more words, there's a lot more at play. It's a lot more at play in the communication. So even the emphasis on different words, I don't know if I used this example before, but I remember one time a counselor in youth corrections was saying to a kid, he says, I didn't say you were guilty. Now, if you change the emphasis on those words and say, I didn't say you were guilty, okay, that suggests something different than saying, I didn't say you were guilty. I didn't say you were guilty. I didn't say you were guilty. Okay? So even the same words, if I nuance and emphasize different words, it's going to change the meaning. Now, that is a separate pattern and process to matching the sensory words to match it back. The practice that we're doing now is just noticing, we're using all of these different indicators, trying to notice how a person's processing, and the idea is that if we can communicate with them in a way that matches the way they're processing, it's likely going to facilitate rapport on one level, and it also increases the likelihood that they're going to understand what you're saying because they don't have to translate it in their head, and it could potentially increase the likelihood that they'll accept what you're saying. Now, there's a lot of potential elements to this. For example, Mike, would you share what you were saying before?
About the constructed?
Yes. So, yeah, the nuance on constructed and then the...
So the way that visual constructed had been explained to me was the idea of the difference between when you think of a generic stoplight, you might have just what a generic stoplight looks like, but not have any type of scene or any type of a context around to it. So that would be more visually constructing, as opposed to thinking of the streetlight that's out here on the corner, that would be more visually remembering. So just because something is visually constructed doesn't mean that that was something you haven't seen, it just means it's being reconstructed without a context.
Right. So that's another consideration, that construct doesn't necessarily mean that you haven't seen it before. It might be pieces of things that you have seen before, but maybe you assemble it in a new way. Or it could be like independent of context or in another context even, that maybe you haven't seen it before. So there's lots of different ways that that could unfold. Another example that he shared is that, you know, if you were to ask a person to, you know, look at like how their silverware is arranged in their silverware drawer in the kitchen, okay? So now, if they look down, it may not be that they're accessing feelings. It may be that in their mind, they're looking in the drawer. They're actually seeing it. And it's one of the things about when people are visually processing, their gestures will oftentimes indicate that they're visually processing. It's like I was watching a guy, he got a Wave Runner, a new Wave Runner, and he was describing it, and he says, oh, it's this awesome thing. And it's the way the thing sits out in front like this, and the handlebars are right here, you know, and he's seeing it in three dimensions right in front of him, and he's describing it and pointing at different things with his hands, and you can tell that he's got a three-dimensional holographic picture of the thing right in front of him by the way he's gesturing. So that those are other things that can indicate. So sometimes people will use gestures that'll indicate. There's also tonality. I don't think I expressed tonality. When people are speaking or processing visually, they will tend to speak faster and a little bit higher tonality. And it's partly because visual processing is fast, generally fast processing. People's pictures will go through pretty quickly, so they're trying to keep up with the pictures in their head. In contrast with kinesthetic processing, tends to be slower and lower tonality. There tends to be more breath when they're speaking. So you can hear that lower, the more breathy kind of feeling. Think of like Marilyn Monroe, okay? Marilyn Monroe's voice, okay? Very pleasant voice to listen to. So that would be a good example of kinesthetic. In between with auditory processing, so if we were to distinguish between auditory tonal versus auditory digital, so an auditory tonal process might be remembering the sound of a train as it's going by, okay? So you might remember what that sounds like, to hear the sound of a train coming from the distance, passing by, and going off into the distance. So auditory tonal processing, you're really present to the sounds, but not necessarily to language, in particular, or talking or inner dialogue. Auditory digital would be more of paying attention to inner dialogue and language. So it's still auditory. Now, when people are processing auditory tonal, then again, you're going to see that looking to the ears, but the tonality of their voice is often very sing-songy. So they sound like maybe a radio announcer. Like, hi, gosh, it's good to see you today. How are you doing? So it says, woo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Chinese language is also a very tonal language, so that there, you know, the nuances of how the particular tones are can make a big difference in the meaning. And so there's a lot of variation in the tonality. If you listen to Chinese language, it's really amazing, the variation in the tonality. When I was in Peru, Quechua is like that the Caro shamans speak. So there's little variations, like saying Caro versus Caro. So they'll sometimes, like the letter will be split off almost like a separate word as they're speaking. They would say, in the morning, they would say to us, Alianchu. Alianchu, and that means, how is spirit living within you today? Aliyami. And Aliyami is the response, right? Aliyami means spirit is living well within me today. And interestingly, they don't have an alternative response to that question. Okay? So you don't, even if you were having a bad day, spirit still lives within you for them. And I thought, that was awesome. But the tone of voice in which they would say it, just like love just poured out of them. And they would say, hatun munai, which means great love, or munai sanko, loving heart. And but the tones in which they would say it were very rich. So again, cultural differences. But auditory tonal is going to be more sing-songy, whereas auditory digital might sound a little bit more monotone and a little bit staccato, as if it were a computer-generated voice. So it's going to have a kind of like a flat-line staccato cadence to it. Yeah.
You can cancel out what you say sometimes by the tone of your voice. Well, I've had people say, "So how are you doing?" And say, "Lousy day today, thanks."
Yeah.
And I'm, "Oh, good. You know what?" Yeah, it stopped them.
Sure. Yeah, and there's we'll learn as we go to that's often an example of either congruent or incongruent communication. So if I'm like saying, "Yeah, I'm really enjoying this," okay, simultaneous incongruity, right? So your body or your tonality or something might be giving one message while your words are giving another message, and we're going to learn how to pick up all that stuff along the way. So is this helpful? I mean, you got tons to play with here tonight. You know, when you go back home and you're interacting with your family, your friends, or whoever you're with tonight, you've got lots and lots of rich distinctions now to observe, to listen. You can practice mirroring and matching on lots of different levels. So could be a very interesting evening. Yeah.
Because it's also contextual. The person can be very good in one context, very kinesthetic in another. It all changes.
Yep. And I would say there's that. I would encourage that on two levels. One is, you know, if you call somebody, "Oh, you're a visual person," right? And that's, you remember how I was talking before about how you put NLP in the foreground, and then it loses some magic, it loses a little bit of power. Just do the magic. Just match their, whatever it is you're observing, just match it and let the magic happen, as opposed to putting it out there in between you as like this other layer of artificial communication. So just practice it and notice the response that you get, and then you can start refining and things like that. Because if all of a sudden people think you're reading them, you know, or you're, you know, analyzing them and things like that, oftentimes, as Damon suggested, it can break rapport, and it can oftentimes long-term break rapport. So then it can be more difficult to get it back. You know, like I said, I work with a school that, they teach psychic skills, intuitive, and things like that. And they're reading each other all the time, and sometimes in very uninvited ways. And I've seen relationships ruined over things like that because people, they're reading each other without their permission. And you know, you've got blocked chakras and entities and all kinds of crazy stuff going on, you know. They freak each other out. They say, "You need to go see Larry. Get that thing removed off of you," you know. And so, okay, more business. But so again, I would just encourage you to practice. Be gentle. Tomorrow, when we get together, we're gonna start moving into more complex processes and things like that, where we're gonna start actually mixing these skills together in very powerful and useful ways. So when you practice tomorrow with each other, again, like we said before, I strongly encourage you to practice with different people, so that you get a variety of different styles, different communication patterns. It's gonna increase your range so that you can be systematic. Work with a wider range of people, a wider range of issues. And so tomorrow's going to be a big day. It's going to be a fun day. And you're going to walk away with stuff that I think you're going to find very, very valuable.